Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on August 29th of 2010 under the headline, Wooden DIY Dollars Spend Like the Real Thing in North Bend. Here we go. In early February 1933, the mayor and city council of North Bend, Oregon, had a big problem on their hands. It was, of course, the depths of the Great Depression. Former Oregonian Herbert Hoover was still president, but he'd been voted out of office 3 months earlier and was the lamest of lame ducks. Banks were closing and collapsing apace as nervous depositors flocked to withdraw their funds. One of those banks was the only bank in North Bend, the First National. It wasn't insolvent, but it would be soon if it stayed open. So it didn't, and it locked its doors. Bankers promised they would reopen soon. For the city government in North Bend, this meant making payroll would be a tough trick. To get by until the bank reopened, Mayor Edgar McDaniel and local businessman Irvin Ross came up with a plan. They'd mint their own currency. The business Ross worked for, Duncan's Myrtlewood Crofters, would cut hundreds of coin-shaped discs of Myrtlewood, and Harold McDaniel would print the chosen designs on these blanks using his father's newspaper press. The finished coins would then be hand-painted with shellac to protect the finish, and then they'd be ready for use. This, by the way, was technically illegal under the U.S. Constitution, which reserves the right to mint coinage to the federal government alone. But under the circumstances, nobody minded. Something had to be done, and the city was following the spirit of the law by making no effort to establish a competing currency. This was strictly a temporary measure. A popular joking admonition at the time was don't take any wooden nickels. That might be why the city didn't make any. Denominations ranged from 25 cents up to $10. Now, $10 in 1933 was worth more than $150 today. It's hard to imagine someone handing over $150 worth of merchandise in exchange for a quarter-inch thick piece of wood that the city promises to pay back with cash someday, especially at a time when institutions, both public and private, were going bankrupt left and right. Yet if anyone did refuse to recognize this new money, I've been unable to find any record of it. In fact, businesses seem to be clamoring for it. North Bend issued two printings of $1,000 each, the second one using a different design so that fewer of the coin blanks would break under the weight of the press. Within a few months, the city had enough cash to redeem all the coins, but by then they'd developed a special cachet, and many people were reluctant to give them up. After making several appeals to coin holders to bring them in and swap them for greenbacks, the city gave up the quest and announced that the Myrtlewood money would remain legal tender in the city of North Bend forever. Anytime someone wanted to come cash one in, the money would be ready. And until a few dozen years ago, this happened from time to time. But the coins have become rare enough to interest collectors, and they're now worth considerably more than their face value. Particularly desirable are the $10 coins, which, because they represented such a large amount of money, were far more likely to be redeemed for cash in the early 30s when the city was still destroying redeemed ones. As for complete sets of all 10, five from each printing run, fewer than 10 survive, probably fewer than five. One of them is in the collection at the Chase Manhattan Bank in New York, which acquired them as soon as they were minted. Because these sets almost never change hands, fixing a value is impossible, but one thing is for sure. If you bring one into City Hall, they'll give you $35.75 for it, face value. By the way, if you're curious, there are no images of these coins available online, as far as I know. This is certainly understandable because they would be awfully easy to counterfeit. Key sources in this story have included works by Harriet Baskus, Ross Winton, and OregonEncyclopedia.com. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at OffbeatOregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most of them are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, etc., but at least two of them are Offbeat Oregon history type stuff. Check them out if you're so inclined. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.